91.3 FM, WYEP, is independent public radio from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Our commercial-free programming and this web stream are made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can help with a donation at WYEP.org. Thanks.
With 60% of our budget coming from members, your financial support makes a big impact on everything we do for you. If you missed your chance to donate, there's still time to take your turn and become a member. Call 412-381-9900 or donate online at WYEP.org. Thanks for your support of 91.3 WYEP, where the music matters.
From the WYEP Community Broadcast Center, this is 91.3 WYEP Pittsburgh. Good evening. I'm Brian Sawarek. Up next, it's Prosody, a show produced here in the WYEP studios that features the work of poets and writers. For a full schedule of all the programs here on 91.3, check out our website, WYEP.org. Programming on WYEP is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. CPB promotes public television, radio, and online services for the American people. Information is available at cpb.org. Support is also provided by the Allegheny Regional Asset District.
Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laura Davis. Laura Davis is currently an MFA candidate at Chatham University in Poetry and Creative Nonfiction. She teaches for a local charter school and serves as co-founding editor of the independent literary journal Weave Magazine. Through Weave, Davis has organized a reading series in collaboration with Open Thread called Poetsburg, along with ongoing workshops supported by a grant by the Sprout Fund. Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm good, Jan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited to hear your poetry. I know that recently you read at the Hungry Sphinx reading series and got a great response. So why don't you go ahead?
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. My first poem is called Buttonholes. I want a poem to be useful, like a buttonhole or a matchstick in the dark, handy as a safety pin or a missing sock. I want to carry spare poems in my pocket, hand them to people on tiny paper cards, poems that remind you of birthdays and anniversaries, practical poems that help you hang a frame straight, poems that plow your field and fill your belly. I hope one day my poems can be a Band-Aid for your paper cut or a spare umbrella in your car, direct you like a compass, make you feel at home like an old armchair. That particular poem was actually inspired by a Naomi Shihab Nye poem called Famous. And I'm sort of... I've been doing a lot of examining about the role of poetry in my own life, and that's sort of a reflection on like the functions of poetry and where I get my inspiration from other poets. This next poem isn't necessarily about, but it was inspired by this past fall I had an orb spider living in my car. So this is sort of me making peace with that spider living in my car. It's called String Theory. Meanwhile, the spider hangs by her thread in my bathroom shower. The sun sinks, each cloud on the horizon tied pink iridescent on the edges. A plane pulls you closer while the wind pulls up on the oak branches. The oak shouts hallelujah toward heaven. A robin tightropes its way home on my cable line. The skyscraper scoots 1/8 of an inch north, northwest. And my coworker stumbles on his way to the elevator. I laugh a little, cover my lips with my palm, think of you. The subway cars crisscross the city. Automobiles heave people home to daughters and sons who twist their mother's arms tangled. An invisible strand of silk pulls my eyes to a man who reminds me of you. The man lugs home with my stare stuck to each wall of his studio. At night, the raindrops tie sky to earth. I draw the blinds. Gravity calls my weight to the bed. I pull the covers over my head, sew my eyes shut until morning. The sun is a bright yellow yo-yo on its way to your palm. The light unravels me from a dream of your body, a furnace. Morning is cold. The shower's hot steam blankets the bathroom window. Water runs down my back. I see the web in the corner, her home brilliant in the mist. She pulls open the front door for you. It's a little bit of a love poem there, too. This next poem is called Blame. Your mother or father, that cigarette in your mouth, bad genes, a poor upbringing, bad spelling or bad breath, Catholics or science or that second pitcher of Bud Light, your inability to keep your legs closed, your inability to keep your eyes open, your crooked teeth or pale skin, your hair or his fist, your ex's 98 Honda Civic, your best friend from middle school, that night, you know the one, or maybe that other night, any Monday, any stray black cat, any bad fortune cookie, that bad Kung Pao chicken, your family's Italian cooking, your soft round thighs. Yes, your thighs. I've been working a lot with dream logic and sort of trying to keep track of my dreams. And I tend to not remember them. And I have a lot of other writer friends that really use their dreams as inspiration, so I've been trying to be a little more adamant about journaling and remembering my dreams. And this next poem is me using my dreams and the pieces that I remember as an exercise for that. It's called Jessica. I was working as a photographer in Amsterdam, but decided to visit you instead. And we built a long red canoe in your bedroom so we could sing old campfire songs as we floated down the Yokogany, turned into a million trout, flapping so hard they sounded like laughing, and we were rolling around in this field, tickled by the long stalks of wheat, and I kissed you like it was normal. This next poem I wrote a few years ago, actually, when I was living in this planned unit development of apartments and townhouses out in the suburbs. So it's about living in the suburbs. It's called Built on the Sound of Crickets. Crickets chirp in the maple that line the loop leading past the townhouses, just shy of the apartment's roof, still teenagers in the world of foliage. Headlights glare into the window of the bedroom. 15 miles per hour they shine down the paved lane, out into the street, where other cars go to the grocery store, drug store, dollar store. Someone downstairs is vacuuming. Now it's stopped. Cord stuck on the coffee table, unplugged. Someone upstairs is watching television. Thursday night lineup, commercials like Maples, loops of apartment sitcoms and one-hour townhouse dramas. Dogs walk neighbors around the maple loop. Electric garage doors open into automatic dishwashers and coffee makers set on timers for 6:15. Community children playing. Just one whistle, and they're wishing the maple's leaves weren't burning orange. 5 more minutes, they say. Each night, coming in just a little sooner. The air smells like the sound of crickets. The taillights look like the sound of crickets. The coffee tastes like the sound of crickets, and the children listen to the sound of crickets. Tonight it sounds like the suburbs. Far off, the traffic sounds like a soft breeze that shifts the curtains on the window.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laura Davis, reading her work. You have a great sense of the grounded in your work, you know, of the sort of the thingness of the world, and it makes me think of you know, Neruda's ode to scissors, Neruda's ode to the orange, and you know how everything is so of this world. You know, is that something that really drives you when you're writing to stay on this plane of existence?
Yeah, I think that's something I've been doing more lately, probably because in some of my other work, I think when I first write something, it tends to be a little grand and tries to sort of pack everything. You know, we kind of start with everything and sort of narrow and focus down. And lately I've sort of been trying to do the opposite, like really starting with the small and the details and really trying to sort of focus those things that maybe people wouldn't notice. I think that's why the first poem I read, just the word buttonhole is just such a great word. And I think there's I don't know, I think there's poetry in those little things. And I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Know,
yeah.
That.
I think it's working. It's kind of surprising to hear that you were working with a grand voice and a and putting everything in the poem, because these poems feel so finished, and they feel so, I don't know, they feel like a sure voice, like that's what you've always done or something, you know. I mean, I know that's not how it goes, but can you talk about the role of poetry in life? You mentioned something about that practical poetry that will help you plow your field. I mean, that was one of the lines from your poem.
Yeah. That's something I've been thinking about, because it's really, you know, poetry. I've always written poetry. And I only recently, within, I'd say, the last 5 years, have I really thought about poetry as a life for me, as a path, and a serious one. So, you know, I have a wonderful family. We're from Pittsburgh. I'm a Pittsburgher. And, you know, a lot of what I've been trying to do lately is think about my role as a poet in my family and in my group of friends that are not poets. And what is my role? How can I bring poetry to people who don't have it? And how can I expose them to it and make it accessible? And I think about this a lot because I'm a teacher. And I think about, and I teach children. So, you know, opening up a world of poetry to them, you know, that's something I'm sort of thinking about. And I think teaching and writing are so related. Mm-hmm. You know, they're both sort of this creative process, an intuitive process. After a while, if you, you know,
right.
you get good at it. So, yeah, well, that's kind of, you know, the role of poetry in my life, my personal life and my professional life.
Do you know what happened 5 years ago that enabled you to start to realize that this is your life rather than something you were doing?
I started to really seek out a community at that time. You know, people, I think the perception of writers is that we're often sort of these, you know, hermits and, you know, reclusive, and that we don't, you know, and it is a solitary process, parts of it, but not all of it. And I guess around that time, I started moving out into Pittsburgh's literary community, and I met my co-founding editor of my literary magazine, Margaret Bashar, and you know, she sort of opened me up to her community, and, you know, just meeting other poets in the area, other writers, other creative people, and this world, it's really fascinating how things have just sort of opened up for me after I decided, you know, to seek out friends. I think it was really after college that I needed some friends. It's difficult. It's difficult as an adult to meet people. And so it was a conscious effort for me to sort of meet like-minded people so that I could develop that.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about Weave later on, but let's hear some more poems.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Now, this is a short poem. The longest days. Feet in the clouds. Head in the million little grains of sand. Strawberry air. Humid with a broken conch song. cracked turtle shells. Can't sail. Oceans sinking. It is simple. You, my bower bird, and I, your mad woman, your trinket lady, collect shiny things to trade for feathery caresses in the evening. Babe at your side, you feed it worms from your breast, and I offer my stamp collection of stars and words and corneas, and you trade your vision for a better kidney in the morning. That poem was inspired by a good friend of mine who, we were both fascinated by this creature, the bowerbird. They really do sort of collect trinkets and garbage, essentially, things that are discarded, and they use them to make their nests, and they're these beautiful spiral, like almost like installation art. It's mm-hmm. It's really fascinating, and there was just something so beautiful about these birds, and it inspired that poem. The next couple of poems I'm going to read are a little more emotional and a little more, I'm drawing from a female experience. And they are in particular describing anxiety. Earlier this year, when I had a lot of changes happen all at once, it was moving and starting graduate school and starting a new job. So these came out of that time period when I was dealing with that anxious change. So this first poem is called Abdominal. She is hunchbacked against her will. World tears at her spine. Hook in her back. Stomach inside out. She is folded. Shin bones are jelly. Spread into her empty torso cavity. Skin scales shed like tears. Thick and salty in the sea foam. She is coiled, waves of serpent hair, pulled and pushed through the eye of her needle belly, tethered and umbilical. She is fetal, head anchored downward, eyes ice hard, wet and opened. She stares into her navel as it recedes, sees her birth in fast forward. Burst. We are held breath, our hands holding back tight sighs, a jar of moths until lungs tear at the edges. Wings flap away our skin stitching, ants in our bloodstream tunnel out each ventricle, a marching little second hand, notch the belt one wider. The tiny spaces between blue veins shoot light, multiply, leak into our blood. We beg to have our skin taken, a tanned deer hide, long and hung from branches, exhaled, not pink and pulled. Our legs are stagnant motion, a dog dreaming, jaw clenching our own shin bone. Until our hands dig red into muscle, until our eyes juggle our palms, until we cannot wait one more moment to get on with it. There is our chest, full and outward, pleura tearing the seams. There is our hair, growing twice as fast, down our backs, long and gray. This next poem's a newer poem, actually, I just wrote more recently. And it's sort of inspired by this childlike wonder and newness that I'm trying to tap into when I write and see things. Talking about awe and, the miraculous in the world around us. It's called What's Underneath. I am the small and wonderful and terrible. I breathe in, climb a mountain, stand dizzy, pull at my jaw, mouth agape. I am in love with the world, big and bare and new before me, a million drops in a million canyons. Look down to find stones at my weary feet, reach beneath them, a space home to wiggling potato bugs, round like my toes, or a galaxy, arced like a tiny human baby rolled up inside my sister's womb. Look up to see black holes, billions of stars. My fingers trace each planet's elliptical journey. My stomach rumbles, and I know we cannot escape being filled. A terrible wonder. Even I am full when my niece holds up the new bug she's just discovered. A lot of what I've been writing recently has been inspired by things I've been learning about the natural world and outer space. I recently had a conversation.
You recently went out there?
Out in outer space. I actually had someone explain to me what black holes were, and you know, I couldn't repeat anything that they said right now, but I just sort of remember the fascination and also the terror in something so large. So this poem is actually called Dear Outer Space. And after the title, there's a quote actually from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's Douglas Adams. So, Dear Outer Space, you just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the road to the chemists, but that's just peanuts to space. I think about you a lot. Your bigness, your black holes and gravity, your little green creatures, the inspiration you provide for Moby songs. But really, Carl Sagan said it first, because it's true. We are made of star stuff. Our carbon molecules long to bind. I think about your colors and the dense lack thereof, the light years of black before you burn our fingertips with brilliance, brilliance that reflects a space-time so dark and shallow, your pitch blackness a colorless embrace in which we feel more alone than together, farther away from everything. The distance grows with each close breath, like I could try to run, but you are all deep water and walls. I think about your stars. I imagine myself as a star just before I fall asleep at night. I feel all the carbon molecules in my body expand and contract like the close walls of a dense pink lung. I leave my other atoms in a wet pile on the floor. I bind to myself, bone to cornea, hair to ligament, skin to carbon-covered skin, bright white skin that smells like iridescent silver in the burning. I am the deepest white flame we have ever tasted, with only the bitter part of our tongues. Space, I am the brightest thing you have ever seen. I am a cold diamond that refracts our dreams, each little prayer we send to God unanswered.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Laura E. Davis. I like the outer space poem. I think it was a good call to put Moby in there.
Yeah, it grounds it a little bit. Actually, this poem was, I forgot to mention, it was also inspired by a collaboration with a musician, my friend Erica. She plays the musical saw. And she said, you know, when people think about, you know, what the musical saw can accompany, it's usually something underwater or outer space. It sort of sounds like, you know, like this outer space themed television show of some kind. So that was a fun collaboration. We did get to perform it that way. So.
Yeah. Well, I really like the, you know, your sense of play in your poems. And it's an interesting conjunction with that sense of play and your precision of language. And then you have these odd imaginative connections happening. So it seems like there's a lot happening in a short space.
Well, thank you.
I want to ask you about, you have some kind of event coming up with Weave Magazine. Can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, we just released our third issue. It came out in December, and we have a number of local contributors. The poet Adam Atkinson, Brenda Batod, Sally Wenmao, Rebecca Mertz, and the playwright Robert Eisenberg. And then we also have a local musician, Mark Rice, who will also share some music at the end of the show. So they'll all be reading, and there'll be a performance of Robert's play. And this will take place on March 3rd at Remedy, bar in Lawrenceville. So.
Okay, and that's March 3rd at 7 p.m.?
7 p.m., yeah.
And is it free and open to the public? Or?
Definitely.
Okay.
And then the third issue will also be there if people wanted to pick up a copy. And, you know, we have a reading in conjunction with every issue. So this is the third reading we've done since we've begun. So
oh, great.
We're excited.
Now, if people wanted to get a copy of the magazine, can't make it to the reading or something, you have a website?
Yeah, it's weavemagazine.net. They can go there for more information about the magazine or to pick up a copy there.
Oh, great. Okay. Okay, we have time for a few more poems, I think.
Great. This next poem is called From Scratch. Begin with two pieces of bread, any kind you like. I recommend wheat bread, preferably homemade, baked in an oven. So maybe you actually start there, with the oven, a mixer, some butter and water and flour. Well, if you can, you could always harvest your own wheat. And while you're at it, churn your own butter too. Your bread will be so much more delicious this way. Just be sure to use fresh cow's milk. Milk your cow, or your neighbor's. Any healthy animal, a goat could work. You might actually want to raise your milk goats from kids to goathood. Find a nice spot in the yard for them to graze on clover. You should also consider growing some sweet grasses that goats like. I can't think of any at the moment, but I do know that Appalachia has some great plots of land for growing grass and raising milk goats. Might want to sell your home and just move somewhere warmer and smaller. You'll like it there. This next poem is a bossy poem. It's called How to Handle Bossy People. Bossy, an adjective tending to give orders, especially when unwarranted, also domineering. 1. Confront the person in an appreciative way. Resist the urge to bow when approaching them. If you cannot, keep your hands folded as if in prayer. If possible, approach them when they are standing in a parking garage. Wait until they are fumbling for their keys. Step toward them. Appear as if you are moving backwards. Pull them to you. 2. Release your frustrations. The key here is to let out all the air in your chest slowly, as a snake would. Do not appear to be fork-tongued. Do not slouch. Let each word join hands with the one preceding and following. Smile only if they do first. Avoid shifting eyes and teeth. 3. Stand your ground. Imagine a box around your feet. If you're having trouble visualizing, you may wish to bring tape. Red works best. Create a small square with the red tape. Stand there. If they try to push you outside of your boundary, raise your hands in protest, palms outward. Show them you still have their keys. 4. Give them a taste of their own medicine. Wear latex gloves. Be certain of this. It can get messy. Spoons are best. You should use a spoon. Use a spoon. Avoid the teeth always. Aim for the heart or liver. They do the same thing. Sometimes a syringe is necessary. In these instances, get out their keys. Wrap them in the latex gloves. Wait. This next poem is entitled Pareidolia, and if you're not familiar with the concept of pareidolia, it's the phenomena where people either see or hear things that aren't there. They see sort of images of people's faces and or shapes in the clouds. Most often it's when people sort of see the image of some kind of religious figure in, a grilled cheese sandwich or something like that. So this is sort of my take on that phenomena. Pareidolia. I saw Darwin in my French toast this morning, pouring on his syrupy beard, melting butter swirled eyes. I stared at him a while, sipping my coffee, briefly considered quitting my job, moving to the Galapagos to survive off the profits of the gullible eBay auction winner. Instead, I chuckle at his sticky smile as I take a bite.
It's the poetry of Laura Davis. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It was fun. Also remember the Weave magazine event, March 3rd, 7 p.m. at Remedy in Lawrenceville. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.
You're listening to 91.3 WYEP. Good evening. I'm Brian Zaworek. Coming up next here on 91.3, it's This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine. For a full listing of all the programs we have for you here on 91.3, check out our website, wyep.org. Good evening.
We want to make sure we do not displease God. We want to make sure we are faithful to the laws and the traditions of our African ancestors, and sexual deviance is out of our country.
Just believe.
There's only so much your Prince Charming can do.
Now I know where heaven is. Never thought it'd feel like this.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Five Kenyan gay wedding planners are freed, but mob violence grows. Dueling demonstrations.